This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I'm so glad you're joining us today. We got a super exciting show, a very envious show, and I'll explain that a little bit more in detail in a moment. But we have New York Times bestselling author of Leaving Isn't the Hardest Thing. Of course, we're talking about Lauren Huff. Lauren's latest book, Monster of a Land, on the road in search of modern America. So, juicy topics, hitting the road with your dog, hoping the van doesn't break down or the truck doesn't break down along the way, and all the unique characters I'm sure Lauren ran into along the way as well. So, we'll talk to her a little bit about the book, her adventures, what she thinks about America during her journey, and looking back at the past and maybe at the present moment as well. Not getting too political here. And then, of course, we'll talk to her about her writing, because obviously she's a best-selling author, and she's also written for New York Times and many other publications. So we're going to pick her brain, try to figure out how she masters her craft. So it's going to be a fun show. Everybody, hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is New York Times bestselling author Lauren Huff. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Yeah, well, glad you're on the show. And we were talking a little bit offline that, you know, I won't spoil the book. I'll let you tell us a little bit about the book, Monster of a Land. But the idea of picking up with your favorite furry family member and hitting the road is, I think, everybody's dream. But few have the, well, it's a family show, have the ability or wherewithal to do it. We'll just put it that way. I won't go any deeper than that. But tell us a little bit about the book, Monster of a Land, without giving all the juicy bits, and then how the whole thing came about.
Well, it's like you said, it's something we all, I think, dream of doing. I've always dreamed of, you know, that great American road trip with my dog, and just never had time to do it. I always had jobs that allowed maybe the sort of road trip that was just, you know, crash driving to someone's house for the 4-day weekend. I never really had time to enjoy it, to just pull over and look at that cool thing over there, and never had time to, you know, let's stop at a beach and let you run around. And it turns out I somehow stumbled into this job that my job is doing field trips for a living. I do these stories for Texas Highways, and I go to small towns and go to museums and go to music festivals. And most of the time I bring Woody along, my dog. And I realized that going on a road trip with my dog might be a great idea for a book that, and also not for nothing, kind of maybe get the publisher to subsidize the great American road trip that I always wanted to take.
Love it. I love that aspect of it. You know, it's good. It's a wonderful job to begin with. You get to go all these wonderful Texas events and the culture and the background and all the things that Texas has to offer. And I have been to almost every nook and cranny of Texas, but it's such a big state. I'm sure I haven't. But going to those events and doing those things and then putting it all together in a sort of a universal trip of what is this all about? And we're now expanding outside of Texas.
Yeah, that was huge. I noticed when I was doing these stories with Woody that it's always hard to find someone in a small town to talk to you, to, you know, take time out of their day. But if you're walking along with a dog, you just attract people who will come and they're talking to my dog. And oops, by the way, I need to put you in a magazine if you don't mind. can I get your email address? And but doing that around the country, I didn't know how it would work. I was a little worried about, you know, for one, I was worried about whether or not the van would make it around the country. And it almost didn't a couple times. But Yeah, I was worried about, I didn't want to write a book just about me or just my thoughts. That would get really boring really fast. But it worked out great. People come up to my dog to say hi to him because he's already grinning at them and desperate to say hi.
Nice.
And I end up with these great conversations, and people will tell you their life story while they're petting your dog.
Always said that about animals and dogs in particular, you know, that it's a common denominator, something everybody has in common. They've either had a dog, or they've got a dog, or they want a dog, or they want, you know, they love your dog. I was even walking through the neighborhood today with my little toy schnauzer and her little push cart, and of course everybody had to stop and say hi to her. And of course they don't know my name for Adam. they know my dog's name, but you know, that's the common denominator. The dog sort of breaks down those barriers and allows people to sort of open up and share stories and act like sometimes they're your, you know, you've known them for your whole life.
Yeah, and it's this common bond we have. Yeah. And I think it's easy to see a person beyond just, a passerby. If you're already talking to them about their dog, it already lowers your guard, it lowers your suspicion, it lowers everything. So, and yeah, people probably give me a little bit of credit because I'm walking around with a really cute dog.
That's it. That's it. Now, the journey itself, obviously, you've been writing. You go to, as you mentioned, a lot of festivals, a lot of events, things of this sort in Texas, and then the idea of going, you know, a little bit more cross country. And I know the book references back to, you know, John Steinbeck's iconic book, Travels with Charlie, dating back to the early 60s. During your journey, without getting, you know, too political or anything, but obviously, with Steinbeck in the 60s, we were at a cusp of a lot of change going on in America, a lot of instability, but a lot of cultural development, a lot of openness, a lot of really things that was changing the fabric of who we were as Americans. When putting it today with your journeys in modern day, how did you find that? Do you see that as we're at that same cusp, or are we different? And if so, how are people different today, maybe than, you know, when John took his journey?
I mean, I think you live enough years on this earth or talk to people who've lived a lot longer, you start to realize that sometimes the world just goes crazy. And people kind of get really mean all of a sudden. Right now, it seems like, and this isn't, it is political, but it isn't political. It's kind of a universal truth. We're so siloed online, and they're, is a lot of investment in keeping us online and keeping us shouting at each other and fighting with each other over very dumb things while they run away with everything. So, kind of the idea, I didn't realize even, I knew I was addicted to social media. I didn't realize how addicted I was to social media until I'm trying to drive somewhere and notifications kept popping up and I couldn't go anyplace. I was in New Orleans and people were telling me, oh, you should go check out this casino and you should go check out this resort. And my dog doesn't want to go to a casino. But yeah, talking to people, and I know I was talking to people from all walks of life, but anytime I did, they weren't very online because they were outside playing with their dog, or they were outside hunting, or they were outside, just living their lives and going camping. There's a whole world out there of people who are just, I think we're all getting a little tired of it and all getting a little tired of these ridiculous arguments that we had for so long. And I've been the brunt of them, and I've probably started more than my share on Twitter. But yeah, I think it was a lesson in me to log off, and I kind of hope we all are starting to do that. I know people who are joining bowling leagues again because we're searching for community and fun, and dogs kind of. A dog doesn't want to go to a bowling alley either. But, you talk to people at the dog park, nobody's talking about politics, really. We need to be reminded, I think, of our commonality and that we all kind of want the same things.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm hopeful that you're correct. And I would agree with you wholeheartedly. So, you know, social media is, it started off as a wonderful tool and a way to connect with people. And, you know, then it became something that you had to do if you're a writer or an author or some sort of public figure. You know, people think you're strange if you're not on social media. And then I think there comes a time, I'll at least speak for myself, where I'm very limited on social media nowadays because it's just, wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. I would rather be out with people, getting to know them, showing off my dog, talking to their dog, and just sort of getting back to the roots of who we are. So I love that. And the book definitely shines that through. So it's a big kudos on that as well.
Thank you.
So putting together the book, Monster of a Land, hit the road with your favorite pup. You got the van going. You're seeing all these people. First of all, how did you decide where you wanted to go? Did you just close your eyes and hit the road, or did you have a map and a plan along the way? And then how did that diverge from maybe your original ideas and thoughts about the whole journey?
Nothing matched my original thoughts and ideas about the journey. But I did kind of, when you're a writer and you have a dog, everyone tells you to read Travels with Charlie. And I avoided it for a long time because I was so traumatized by all those books that we read as kids where the dog doesn't make it. And I just, one of the times I was reading it, I was watching my dog slowly age and it was getting time to call the vet. And I could not finish that book. I didn't want to know that Charlie didn't make it. Charlie's fine. I'm not spoiling a 7-year-old book. But yeah, I based a little bit off of Steinbeck's journey. I wanted to circle the country. He, of course, started in New York. And by the time he got to New Orleans, he was disheartened. And I think he just missed home and just made a beeline for New York. But I started in Austin. So when I got to New Orleans, we were just getting started. And I got to go to Florida and got to drive up the coast. And it was, I think I had a lot more time in that sense that, yeah, I was starting from the other end of it. I also had, you know, the benefit of at the time I wasn't in a relationship. I think he missed his wife a lot and just wanted to go home. My dog was with me, so we're pretty good.
Yeah. You know, with Steinbeck, it was, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. To me, when I read the book, it was more of a combination of, I've always wanted to do this, but on the other hand, wouldn't this be a great story? Wouldn't this be a great book? And I sort of, when I read Monster of a Land, your book, it was more of, this is something people have said I should do it. I've been talking about doing it. And so, yeah, I'm going to get subsidized and going to get paid for it. Now that's even better. But to me, it wasn't like that was the whole purpose. It was like, okay, now that I can actually afford to do this and I have the time and the flexibility to do it, I'm going to finally do this. And, I got the impression that you didn't have a set plan on who you were going to talk to or where you were going to talk to them. It was just people you met along on the journey.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of impossible to plan because the moment you plan it and make plans with someone, then you're expected there. So it happened a lot on the East Coast where a lot of my family lives and, you know, people knew I was coming and they wanted me to show up. But once I kept talking about it as turning left, this real road trip would start because I've wanted to do this since I was in high school. Like I went to high school in Amarillo and we lived right on 66, that storied highway.
All right.
And I would talk to friends about it and we never made it. It just, you know, life always gets in the way. And life wasn't getting in my way this time. I got to just go do it. So it was a trip of and everyone I met, I expected so much judgment about the van because it really did. It was a sketchy van. It was what I could afford, though. When we say the publisher subsidized it, let's not go crazy with credit.
I understand that wholeheartedly.
This was a very sketchy van that we weren't sure was going to make it. But I expected people to look at it and kind of question my sanity. But every time I talk to someone, they'd be like, oh, that's the life. Man, I always dreamed of doing that. And they'd tell me about, you know, a road trip they took or always wanted to take. So it got to a point near the end where I really wanted to go home. And I kind of thought I owed it to myself and to everybody who doesn't get to do this kind of crazy thing for a job that we should take a detour maybe to Colorado and have a little bit of fun before we go home.
Nice. Well, thank you for doing that for us. We appreciate it. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Lauren Huff and her book, Monster of a Land. And then, as I promised, we're going to pick her brain about writing in general. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets on Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Lauren Huff and her book, Monster of a Land, On the Road in Search of Modern America. So now, one thing I will say, the listeners are going to ask me about this, and I apologize, I didn't cover the most important person of all right off the get-go, which was Woody, your husky mix. What did Woody think about this whole darn journey?
I worried that he would be traumatized, you know, missing his bed and missing his friends. And this is a dog who's broken into friends' houses because he wanted to play with their dog. I got a call one time. I'd lost him at a park and hadn't found him for a couple hours and got a call from a friend of mine who was like, Woody's here. He had walked four blocks and broke into her house, just kicked the door open. Like, hey. So, yeah, I was worried I would traumatize him. He was completely unfazed by it. It's this dirty trick that we play on dogs every time they get in the car. It's either to the vet or to the park, or I'm gone for 3 months and they don't know which it is. So it's amazing he gets back in a car anytime because I have taken him to a vet. But he does. He just kind of hops in and he's like, all right, well, I'm trusted. Let's hope. Can we not do that? The bad place though. And we got back after 3 months and I thought he'd forget. No, he just went and sat by his treats. I was like, they're in there. Clearly you forgot where home was, but the treats, they're in the jar there.
I hope you find them. I'm congratulating. Yeah, I love how adaptable they are. Oh, well, I tell people, you know, I'm a firm believer of talking to your animals and letting them know what's going on and what they need to do and why is this going to be a good thing, because I know it sticks with them because they understand far more than we ever give them credit for. But also take them to your vet to get pet and loved on every once in a while, because, yeah, they don't want to go there if they can help it. So that's the key. I think as long as they're with their favorite person, their human companion, then at the end of the day, they're happy with no matter where they're at.
I'd love to think so.
Yeah. As long as there's treats. Got to have treats. Yeah. Well, then once you completed the book, Monster of a Land, On the Road in Search of a Modern America, what were your thoughts and expectations once the book, you know, it's coming out? Yeah, I'm sure you're getting plenty of feedback about it. It's a great, great book. I love that every single bit of it. Were there surprises along the way? Were there ahas that you didn't realize people would get from reading the book? Or was it spot on with what you'd hoped to accomplish? Or did you even have a goal other than collecting the subsidies and having that sweet van of yours?
Oh, the van's long gone. You couldn't pay me to get back in that thing. But you never know how people are going to receive a book. And, you know, once it's done and once you send it in and say, I'm happy with this copy, that's it. You can't make any changes. And it's just always amazing when people get it and really get it. And I send it to, you know, a couple of my friends first who are, I'd like to believe that they're honest, but, you know, if they love it, they love it. And I send it to a few writers. And yeah, I think people are getting it. They're understanding what I was trying to do, which I really would love to hope means that I did all right. In any case, it's fun to write a book and at the end of it, be really proud of it. Like it's a book I would read. And I love that I could do that. That still amazes me that I can do that.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's definitely something you should be proud. You should be proud because it's a fantastic read. You sort of gave me a lead into all this whole writing thing. Obviously, you've worn many, many hats and helmets and aprons and all these different jobs you've had along the way. Has writing always been part of that fabric? Has it been something you sort of fell into later on, or how did the whole writing thing come about?
I think I've always written, and as long as I can remember, I was writing. But I didn't know that writing a book was something someone like me got to do. And I was in the year, I've gone to 1 year of high school. I graduated, thankfully it was the senior year, and you know, I joined the Air Force and have worked as a bartender and a construction laborer. I've worked at Best Buy for a minute. I've worked at Starbucks. I've worked everywhere. And for a long time as a cable guy, I just really didn't see writing as a venue, but I couldn't stop writing. So eventually I got the idea that I might try to do this. It was a friend of mine, Taylor Stevens, who sent me a book and said, hey, can you read this? I want to send it to a publisher. And a couple of years later, I bought her book at a Barnes and Noble. And it was, wait, if she, so people can, like us, can write books. Oh, all right. Good to know.
Nice.
So I started working on it and started working on it seriously and started trying to write stories that anyone might want to read besides me just, spilling my thoughts on a page.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I think, it's a great release no matter what you're going to do with it, even if it's just for your own personal knowledge and your own personal thing. I think it's a great way to get your message out in a release. But then when you get to develop that into more of, publishing it, sharing it with more people and then putting, stories into books and things of this sort, it really does hit home, when you see your book on the shelf for the first time. Or I remember my first book that came out, I was doing a speaking event in Nashville and then get invited to the Great Southern Book Festival to speak, which was fantastic. My venue was on the courthouse steps, the government building, I should say. And so it was pretty cool. And then I walked into Barnes & Noble, and not only did I see my book on the shelf, but I also saw a couple articles I wrote for Cat Stern, Dogster magazine. And I thought, wow, it's surreal when that really does happen.
Yeah, it's the 10th. I think it's our age where it doesn't matter what I write that goes up online that's meaningless to me. But, Texas Highways is a magazine I can hold. The New York Times is a paper I can buy and hold in my hands. And yeah, seeing your book on a shelf at a library or a bookstore is, for some reason, a library is so much more impactful to me. I see my book at a library and it still knocks me out. I think because I grew up, in libraries, I spent so much time in a library a couple of years that I was allowed to use the microwave in the office. The librarians just knew me. I kind of, oh yeah, I'm a regular.
I love that. I love that. And that's why I say when you're a published author, it doesn't matter what you publish. You get the little number on there and you're part of the Library of Congress, which, is kind of a magical thing. And it's out there forever. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's out there. So I think it's great. One other quick question I'll have you talk just a little bit about as far as writing. How is it compared to writing a story for a magazine, writing for a newspaper column, or writing a actual novel and sort of memoir?
My first book was a collection of essays. And I, for the longest time writing this latest book, The Monster of a Land, I didn't know what was wrong with me, why I couldn't just put my butt in a seat and write. I just couldn't do it. I would get, 10 pages and just, I would stop for 2 months, promise to get back to the next day. But 2 months later, I still hadn't done anything. And it's the writing, the shorter pieces, as soon as you get done with it. So you get that nice little dopamine hit and accomplishment. And oh, I did that. And then you get to start the next essay. But writing a narrative nonfiction book that just keeps going, there's no done until you're done. And that's a long way away. I started treating myself like a toddler. I would just promise myself a popsicle. If I did an hour of work, I could have a popsicle. And if I did, 2 hours of work, I could, I trained myself like a puppy or like a toddler to sit my butt in a chair. Like, you can have a snack if you're writing.
Nice, nice. And give one to Woody while you're there. So that's great. I love it. I think it's true. Even with me, I'll admit I have a fairly short attention span, and I like things, quick, short, essays, little articles, things that I can, it's got good meat, but I can wrap my head around it and move on to the next one because I get excited about the next one. But when you get a good book, like your book, Monster of a Land, and it takes you on that journey and you feel yourself in that ratty old van with your favorite furry pal and seeing these people and talking to these people, I really got wrapped up into that whole aspect of it. So thanks for eating the popsicles and doing the journey for us. We appreciate that because I know it's a long haul by the time you get a book out actually on the library shelves.
It really is. It's yeah, I should probably do a little bit more walking with the dog to make up for some of the popsicles, but
popsicles are always good. Always good. We just heard the ice cream guy coming down the road just earlier on. So we're happy. We still run out to get the ice cream and get the popsicles.
Wouldn't? Yeah,
that's it. That's it. So it's fantastic. Well, everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's Monster of a Land. On the Road, In Search of Modern America by New York Times bestselling author Lauren Huff. Lauren, where can people find out more about you, your writing, where you're going to be, how they can meet you, all that wonderful stuff? And you don't have to divulge every social media site either. We can put that aside.
I'm on Instagram, Real Lauren Huff, and I'm on I do a Substack under my name. I think the Substack's called, it is called Bad Reads. And if you want to read a little bit more, that's there. And I do have a website, laurenhuffauthor.com, that will have all the tour dates on it. Tour dates are also just on the Penguin Random House website. If you search the book name, it'll come up.
Nice, nice. Well, we'll get that posted so everybody can keep track of what you got going on, see if they can get out to see you for sure. And once again, everybody pick up a copy of the book, Monster of a Land, On the Road, In Search of Modern America by New York Times bestselling author Lauren Huff. Lauren, thanks for coming on the show. Great read, great job, and give Woody a hug from all of us.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making the show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas for the show, you can drop us a line at petliferadio.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts. It's a cornucopia of barking fun. It's at petliferadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.